This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors of our dominant culture and parent with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Jennifer Jarrett, where we talk about what it's like being a white mom raising Black kids. All right, I want to welcome to the show today, Trinise Harmer. I'm excited to have her. She's a native of Nashville. She's a photographer and a videographer, and she founded Urban Threads 615 and the True Talks podcast. Welcome, Trinise.
Hey, thank you for having me. And might I add, I appreciate you getting my name right the first time around.
Girl, oh, good.
I have graduated high school and college twice. Right? College twice. I earned an associate and then I earned my bachelor's and they butchered it all three times. So where were you?
That's frustrating, right? People say my name all different ways too all the time. I'm like Chafee, Chaffee, Shaffee. Yeah. I'm like, okay, whatever.
I spelled it phonetically and all, and it was still messed up. So thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good. So thank you so much for being on the show. Tell us a little bit more about you and where this True Talk podcast came from and your Urban Threads.
Got you. Well, as you've mentioned, I'm a freelance photographer and videographer. I'm also a blogger out of East Nashville, born and raised. I wear that with pride. And this all came about just from a trip that I took to DC. I was accepted to Howard University and I got up there and realized, man, I'm too Southern for, you know, the coast. I'm too Southern for this fast paced living. I need my tranquility and my silence. And up there, it was sirens interrupting each other. Everybody was just all over the place. And so when I was up there, I really missed home in a way that I had lost my grandmother. And so a portion of me was running. I mean, I could be honest now. I was kind of running, trying to create something anew. And I still had the idea of launching a magazine under the name of Urban Truth. And I sat back and I evaluated, well, people are not really reading magazines anymore or any published publications. They're online and it's virtual. So I said, why not do this in a blog form? And I had taken a course at Volunteer State Community College that was leadership based. And it required, one of the class assignments was requiring us to start a blog. I got really good feedback from my class members there. And so I liked the feeling of it. They said I had, you know, a blogger's voice and I should really go with it. You know, once I lost my grandmother, you know, I was like, okay, you know, I kind of put that off. But then I got to DC, was feeling homesick, came back to Nashville. And I said, I think right now is a good time to launch Urban Threads. Nashville at that time was welcoming a whole lot of newcomers. We've seen an influx of people come here from all over the world and make residence here. And I said, what is attracting these people to Nashville? What is that culture that needs to be preserved? Because we're losing much of it, having, you know, addressing certain spaces and accommodating new people. I welcome them, but I don't want to lose what was already there that attracted them here in the first place. And so I created Urban Threads in hopes of preserving Nashville culture. That ended up transforming into showcasing Nashville through multimedia because I was studying mass communications and, you know, journalism and media and that type of thing. And so I said, let me add multimedia into that because long term, if I try to go for a salary paid job, they're requiring a lot of journalist students to at least grow familiar with nonlinear editing and things of that nature. So you're still going to dip into multiple media platforms and learning that whole multimedia piece. And so I said, let me just jump ahead of that and start filming. Well, that was hitting back on some roots for me too, because I attended Nashville School of the Arts and I studied mass communications and theater. I just hadn't pursued it the way that I was doing at a younger age during my high school career. And so I started just really reconnecting from the pieces of me that I'd left behind and exploring it to the maximum extent that long-term transformed into Urban Threads, me creating my own website, building it and producing content around Nashville stuff.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool. And I totally second you about the DC culture. We lived around DC for 8 years and
girl, it goes from DC to Maryland. You hit Silver Springs in 2 seconds, just walking down one sidewalk. I'm like, this is too much.
Yeah, it was just crazy. So yeah. And, but I love what you're saying too, about why you started Urban Threads to preserve the Nashville culture and why people were coming there in the first place. That's really cool. That's really beautiful. And I just kind of felt chills a little bit when you said that, because I'm just like, you know, that's so neat that to think about that there is a beautiful culture that, you know, in your community and each of our family culture, whatever it is, like there's something that we need to do intentionally in order to save the good things in it that we want to preserve. So that's really cool that you decided to do that. And that was your passion. That's awesome.
I didn't want to get lost in the sauce of things changing, right? You know, yeah. I wanted people to go, hey, this is why we're here, not to dismiss it. Cause at the time we were seeing a lot of gentrification occurring. We were seeing a lot of people being ostracized in a sense. And so I just kind of wanted to say, hey, no, let's figure out a way to welcome new people, but not displace people in the
process. Yeah. Yeah, I see that happening in my little hometown growing up. They really push away new people that are trying to come move in. And it's like, well, we need to have a balance, like maintain some of it, but also grow. So that's really cool. So I'm excited to talk with you about, well, you responded to a post where I said, I want to talk about what is in the culture, in the news, in the climate, in our society right now. And so let's talk about that. What is one of the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors going on in mainstream or in the dominant culture that you believe needs to change?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go with systemic racism at this point. We have too many different things happening at once that's affecting people on a marginalized scale. And I think if we just fine tune a lot of stuff, you may see some greater good come out of it. More specifically, given the recent George Floyd incident, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and so on and so forth, with even previous accounts of things that's happened. And now, more recently, Elijah. We just need to see a lot of either police change in the way we're policing people in specific areas when it comes to Black and brown communities. And we also need to see some legislative changes, you know. Politics, we're not going to be able to run away from. So what are the parts of it that's working and what are the other parts we need to just fine tune and fix and get on the same page about things? What is the common enemy in it all? And I think people fret away from that idea because they think an enemy has to always be a person. But sometimes it can be a thing. It can be something as simple as the way we're conducting stuff. And I think if we knock that out, we'll be a pretty swell country.
Right.
That we can unanimously agree on.
If only, right? Yeah. If only. So what is it about some of the systemic problems that you see that have been conditioning us to you know, have racism be part of our dominant culture? Like how have you seen that in our conditioning, in our communication, in our media? Where has it come out to you in the most? Like, where do you see it the most?
I'll kind of build this response a little bit so I can walk people through it. Because I think sometimes we say one thing and it can represent so much. So I'm going to start very minimal and then work my way up. Because
there was a lot you said. Because it's like we do need to understand the policies. We do need to understand, you know, some of the way that people are facilitating, even housing and even, you know, things like that you don't even think about until you start to see, oh, wait, people are being marginalized. You know, they word it in a way. I mean, I think we think about it, but we don't, unless we're educated about the wording and about the language of the way that those policies and you know, things that are created, how it's like, you got to be cognizant of those things and the wording in the media or wording in the laws and things like that. So let's start with narrow it down.
Language, language definitely plays. I'm glad we started there because language definitely plays a role. I'm learning to watch what I say and how I say it because we both share one thing in common, if nothing else, right? Before we don't know each other, but before we get into the meat of things, we share the fact that we sit behind mics right? And we have the power to share a message with someone. What is it that we're trying to say? And so when we're speaking on any topic, but more specifically things like systemic racism and things that are directly affecting groups of people like myself and brown people, or anyone who's ever been oppressed, we have to be intentional about what it is we're trying to say. And so for me, I'm learning that, yeah, I can be a passionate, I can be just as angry as most people, but I'm learning that it doesn't sit well with me long term. So at some point I have to shalom, and then readdress it. And so I'm learning the power behind words. And so when I start off, language being one of those things, microaggressions, we need to watch that. The way we take things for granted of what we're saying and how it affects people. You know, don't pass things off as jokes that shouldn't be a joke, especially given the tensions behind some of the things that get said. So microaggressions should be one thing people should spend time addressing. And that would help long term and on a macro level, because if you start thinking about that within your home, it will prevent you from allowing anyone around you, rather than your community, to feel okay with spreading those microaggressions. And then that would triple over into the society piece, right?
Yeah.
What we allow to become acceptable or normalized. So that's one of my starts.
100%.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the second piece is diversity. How diverse is your own household? You know, I made a post on my page, I can pull it up actually, yesterday, about making sure that you have a diverse household. And I just challenged some folks. So I'll jump to the midst of it, where I stated, check your actions. If you only have house guests and neighbors who look and talk like you, you are a part of the problem. If you sit around relatives that use abusive tongues and microaggressions and not say or do a thing about it, you are a part of the problem. If your kids look at me weirdly because they are unaccustomed to seeing a black or brown face, you are failing as a parent. If you can recall a child of color from your kids' class, just because they are the only black or brown kid in class, you are sadly failing your child. If you scroll through your Facebook and only see pictures of yourself and your own ethnicity, because majority of the time is spent, your time is spent within your own race, you are part of the problem. That's some specifics, you know, that we can start at base.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's awesome. I love the idea of like bringing, because when you were like, how diverse is your home? I'm like, well, I don't know how to change that, but let's invite people into our home, be friends with them. Let's bring in books and literature that is diverse. Let's be friends with people on social media and diversify the interactions that we have. I love that. That's so awesome.
And right now, everyone gets a pass because COVID is restricting everybody. So everybody's house is looking like themselves right now. But what can you do? Like you said, bring in resources, books, novels, things that don't commonly look like what's either taught in our schools, because we need a lot of work there. We don't need for history to be changed in a way that it makes things polite. It needs to be something that is very much so upfront and an acknowledgement. That's what we're missing along all of these many years that have spanned when it comes to racism. America's never really acknowledged the problems at hand. Mm-hmm. How many lives have we lost, you know, in many battles, not even just in the black and brown community, but in many marginalized groups, we have had so much bloodshed, you know, and we have to acknowledge the wrong. Not glorify it. Don't make a statue out of it. Don't put it in flags. All of that can go in a museum and we can say, this was the man that did this. This is where we need to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Wow. So that's awesome. And you know, okay. So I mentioned before we started hitting record that, you know, I grew up in a predominantly white community and, you know, this idea of racism in our school system was that it was a thing of the past. And it's like those things you said ring true to me that I was like, I can only remember one or two kids in my school that were black or any color. And you know, and so it was like when, but I did witness them being victim of racism. And I was appalled by it. Cause I was like, what? That I've never, I thought that was a thing of the past, you know? And so, but that's what informed me growing up, was that I didn't have experience basically. Yeah. And so then when I started moving out, you know, and going in to other towns, other cities, other states, you know, I'm starting to meet a diverse culture. I started to get afraid that I could offend them, you know, because I was not informed, because I just didn't have that experience. And so, you know, that, so now I'm looking, you know, looking at myself, well, okay, I don't want to fall into that category anymore, that I don't have that experience, but how do I make that transition into being able to be with a diverse people of diverse cultures without this fear of offending?
Yeah. Well, I think that you're already on the mark having me on this show. You didn't know who you were going to get, you know, and I'm very outspoken, so it could have went anyway. No, I'm kidding. One thing you'll learn from me from jump is I make light of a lot of stuff. I'm a bit of a joker. I think
humor is another way that we need to deal with this in a respectful way, still not in a, like you say, not in a microaggressive way. I think humor can cross the line, but I, being able to, like, I want to be able to laugh at myself that I'm ignorant, but at the same time recognize that it's not okay. You know, so it's like that balance, right? So
we're all learning. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all learning. Even activists have had to learn, and they've been some of the most perfect people in putting things in place that have been game changing for us to even be able to communicate. And so no one has that one answer or that one way of doing it. And what I always challenge people to think about is their purpose here. You know, I don't know what spiritually your life looks like or your beliefs, but what is your purpose at the end of the day? And once you tackle into that or tap into that, you'll be able to be a little bit more comfortable in addressing things and also just living, you know? And so even the parts of you that you consider ignorant, if no one else, because we're always, you know, super harder on ourselves than the other way around.
Yeah.
You'll still learn within those things. But I do want to say kudos to you for even being so bold about welcoming anyone on your podcast. And then also recognizing that portion of you that may have lacked. I was jokingly going to say, we could have met, cause I was always the only Black kid in class. So there's a chance that I was probably that one that you knew. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, so for me, it was the other way around, but, because I spent majority of my time when it was, you know, instructional or academic based, being the only Black kid in most classrooms. But I grew up going to cultural fests. My mom put that into me and my brother at a very young age. I was marching in my stroller, you know, and I was going to cultural fests, you know, Caribbean Fest here in Nashville. I'm super sad about the African Street Festival not being able to put on this year. But to answer your question, I bring that up, is those are ways people can really engage with diverse people. I've been to the festival they had a few years back here called Cultural Day and Bicentennial. I don't know if they have it anymore, but that was when they had like Hawaiians come over and it was like a luau feel to it. And you could see them actually perform rituals and, you know, do some of their artistic performances and taste their food. So anytime there's good music and food, come out. Don't care what name it is. Go to Germantown and hang, you know.
Just get informed.
The Oktoberfest, if we're able to have it here, man, go. I cover everything the same. Like, and I'm there to listen to anybody who feel like they got something to say to me, whether it's negative or good, you know.
You learn. We'll learn from each other, I hope, right? Yeah. That's the hope. Yep. So that brings up a question in my mind that, you know, that there was a hot topic for a little while about cultural appropriation and how, you know, you would see white celebrities with dreads and braids and things like that, and how it was like, they shouldn't be doing that. And even that year, I remember that year, my daughter wanted to be Moana for Halloween. And it was like a sensitive topic because it was like, well, she just likes Moana. I don't know what to say. You know,
let the baby live.
Yeah, right.
Get a little outfit. She just gonna miss the complexion. That's it. Don't blackface her now. Wait.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, let the baby live. You know.
No, but how do we do that though? Like with you know, being able to honor and respect our differences and our cultural heritages without feeling like we're trying to steal it. I mean, it's almost like what you were saying about how you wanted to preserve, you know, your Nashville heritage and culture while still wanting to welcome the new things. And so in our, you know, historically, culture is stems from blending, right? Yeah. The different cultures and things like that. When did it become cultural appropriation though, to like do different things that, reflected those other cultures?
Yeah.
But, you know?
Yeah. No, I follow. You're asking, you know, if it's okay for the baby to rock things, right, that are based in different cultures. Absolutely. You know, I jokingly say don't blackface because that's really the extreme measure. Right. Right.
I think
yeah. that appropriation comes in when people have to evaluate where it's too extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So normally what you'd see is if there's a film that calls for a black role or something like that, rather than those directors going and getting someone that already fits that requirement naturally, they take someone else who doesn't and then turn them into what they perceive as black or whatever that personality is for that character. That's where it becomes an issue.
Yeah.
The appropriation, I think sometimes it gets misused in that, something as simple as a child dressing up as a character, that's not offensive to vast majority people within community. Some people find that honorable. I think that is when you're mocking a group of people and you're doing the whole blackface and making
that's
it like
just an insult.
Or you created it. You know, it's like, hey, come on now, give credit to whatever gave you that inspiration, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the happy medium in that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a child dressing up, you know. I wouldn't think twice about it, you know.
Yeah, as long as we don't do that. Yeah, no blackface, no. So it doesn't, as long as it doesn't border into offensive. I mean, that's really...
mocking and offense, yeah.
And I like, you know, that you do see more and more in media, the diversity in movies, you know, you see more like the... I don't know. I haven't seen Crazy Rich Asians or anything like that, but I love that there's if it's an Asian role, they should have an Asian, you know, actor. If it's a black role, then they should have a black actor. Like, it's just no question, right?
Yeah. I think that stuff stems from like some of the, you know, slave pictures we've seen and then also like the biblical stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest display of misplaced everything.
Can't even think of a word. Just everything.
Because you know, the reason why it's so difficult is because it's went through generations. It's been retaught.
Yeah,
anything
exactly.
That can be offensive and it's been retaught, that's where it's a problem.
Exactly. Know? Exactly. So it's like, that's what, you know, before I hit record, I was telling you like how I address both micro and macro culture issues. You know, it's like there are things going on in our society, in our dominant culture that we need to be aware of, but there's also things going on in the inside of our families that we need to be aware of. And what is it that we're perpetuating and conditioning inside of our homes? You know, culture is all social construct, right? It's whatever we're socialized into that we normalize, you know, like we don't even recognize it when we are being conditioned, because that's just what we observe and what we see that's what's informing our understanding of how the world works, right? To see how our parents behave or the conversations that we have. And so I like what you're saying that, you know, we as parents need to be cognizant of what we're saying, what we're valuing, what we're bringing into our homes, you know, to be able to facilitate a different kind of social conditioning that is inclusive and kind. And, you know, just when you are talking about answering my question, like, how can I feel like I want to become friends? I want to reach out. Well, I need to just approach these new friendships and relationships with love and accepting that, look, they're a human being. And all of us as human beings need love and connection.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it, right?
Nine times out of 10, when you go to those events, the reason why I said, you know, going to like more diverse events, rather it's cultural based or not, you're going to find like-minded people who are looking for the same thing. And so sometimes it takes for you to just put yourself out there and allow the universe, God, whatever you believe, to do its thing. And you walk away from there with many a connections because it was somebody down there waiting for you. But if you never went, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I love that. I love that this idea of what you're going to give just as much as what you're going to, you know, you want to come down there to say what, because I think that that's sometimes when we go into new situations saying, well, all right, what am I going to get out of this situation? Well, what are you, you have something to give too, mm-hmm. you know, connection and acceptance and all of those and education that you want to share with each other. It's mutual yeah. beneficial.
You know, what's odd, and it just came to me, is that, you know, we had to reschedule this because I was very sick the day mm-hmm. I was supposed to record with you. I was extremely sick and I felt so bad because I was like, this is the one out of two that I responded to at random. I don't know a thing about either one of the people, but I was so excited to do this. And now we're here and we're recording this on the day that John Lewis is being memorialized. And I'm like, man, it's just timing. Nothing's done by mistake. It wasn't supposed to happen then. You know, you're supposed to catch me on this vibe and rock out with me over this podcast and relate. That's all.
Yeah.
That's so I'm awesome. Glad this happened. I say me this, too. I'm glad this happened.
Me too. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your thoughts and your perspective. And I just, I'm grateful that, you know, that I'm working here to get some diversity and not just,
yeah, you
know,
yeah.
not just Fine. Women, not just white people, but you know, it's,
yeah.
And, you know, I have other episodes that I'm trying to have this conversation more and it's like, no, it can't come from me and it can't come from the white community so much. It's got to come from the Black and Brown community teaching us. Facilitated yeah. for us. Like I don't know.
I just hope. Don't.
Yeah.
I mean, you yeah. gotta think about it. One of my professors actually brought this to my attention that I think for the past 1 or 2 weeks, the top like 10 bestsellers have been like all by Black authors or pertaining to the subject of racism. So, you know, and that's what we were mentioning even before we got into recording this, is that we're seeing a shift somewhere. Mm-hmm. And me and her go back and forth because sometimes I'm more pessimistic than others, but I'm learning, you know, and as I learn, as I take a moment and a break, I'm able to see the optimism in what yeah. can become. And so seeing that change is showing you how on a macro level, we may get there. It's yeah. just, we're sitting at a pivotal place right now where it can go either way. And I think that's what's more fearful for people like myself, a Black or Brown, or people like you who really want to see change and are trying to be as intentional about changing it within yeah. your home first.
So. Well, it's unfortunately, and this again goes back to what you were saying in the very beginning about trying to preserve natural culture. Unfortunately, so many people are afraid of losing something yeah. by being diverse and being inclusive. And it's like, that's unfortunate. I mean, definitely we want to appreciate our cultures individually, but we also have a collective culture that we need to consider that all of us are facilitating in, that we don't have to lose anything. We have everything to gain by being yeah. inclusive. And so just people, white supremacy, the stuff that's out there, I know that I don't want to talk about. Those are conversations like, I don't want to even talk yeah. about it. Sorry, I won't
leave
give you a platform.
For me, girl. Leave that for me.
I won't give you a platform. yeah.
Leave that
because,
for me.
Because
I'm one of those people. Go ahead.
Well, because it was like, I was watching this one discussion conversation where it was like, well, of course, whites have supremacy because in history, it's proof. It's proven that we can dominate the culture and society and wars and we win, you know, because we're just whatever. And I'm like, okay, but this is the 21st century. You know, I'm like, yeah. this is no, that's just not okay anymore. And, yeah. and it's like, but that narrative that they're perpetuating is fear. It's very fear-based. And so they want to limit the diversity and inclusion because they're afraid.
Yeah.
And the fear is based in losing something, losing dominance. Well, for one, unfortunately, that's their goal. And they're afraid of losing some kind of cultural foundation that is white. And I'm like, what is white culture? I don't even know. But yeah. because yeah. again, it's, there's a collective culture, but it's all of us participating in and feeding into it that ultimately it has to lead towards inclusion and diversity, or we're not going to survive as a society.
Yeah. It goes back to that acknowledgement piece. You know, if I come into your household and I start moving things around, talking about I'm going to make it better, and I don't even know what I'm moving or where I'm placing it, where it's been. I'm just moving it around. And then by the end of it, I take a picture and say, look what I've done. But you don't have the before picture. So how do you know if I've made it better or not? And you don't even, you know, have some type of account of what was, what wasn't. You know, you're just looking at the finished product and it may not be beneficial to those objects in the room. You may have had that there by a window so that they can have enough light to grow. You know, and so that's the problem when we start changing things and we start seeing something that needs to be changed, but we're not taking out the time to see it for what it is. So, and I say that because we have an issue with people saying they're colorblind. They don't see people's. No, I want you to notice my pigmentation. I want you to notice that I have melanin. It's popping. I want you to notice some of my culture. I want you to see me in my blackness because I'm unapologetically black. You know, the same as I'm going to know that you're white and I'm going to know that, you know, someone else is Asian. I had to explain that to someone that I follow on Instagram that was teaching their kids, you know, we don't see color in my house. So I'm like, so how will it be able to describe people? You know, you're not going to go to Asian countries and say you don't see Asians. You didn't see a Chinese. You didn't wonder why they use chopsticks over forks. Like, it's time to sit down and recognize that there are differences. This is culture. Engage with it. Learn it. You know, don't always think that someone
and become
has to
literate.
Don't always think somebody has to come around to your terms. It's okay to learn Spanish. I speak to some Hispanic kids in my neighborhood, you know, in their native tongue, because I wanted to show them that, yes, I do speak English, but I'm going to address you in the language in which you speak. They're the only ones who speak English in their household. Their parents speak Spanish. So when they see me and I say, oh, a lot of them, they light up because I just related to them in their native tongue. I didn't expect them as little boys to come up to my standard of, you know, communication.
Wow.
It's a two-way street, you know?
Yes.
Yep.
That's so cool. Awesome. Well, Trinise, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on the show. It was lovely talking to you. And thank you. This is a great conversation. And so tell us where we can find Urban Threads and the True Talk podcast. Where can we connect with you?
Yeah, I tried to make it simple. Urban Threads 615 everywhere on social media, or you can go urbanthreads.com. And yeah, True Talks is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor, all of that. Just all search that. It. Look.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Thank you so much, Trinise. Loved having you on the show.
Same. Likewise.
Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss the next episode with Kyle Zufelt. We talk about what it means to be able to read rebelliously. Again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Help more people find the show. Download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Success Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember to set your intentions for your family culture and lead your family toward your vision of success.